You're listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 16.
Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell.
Today on the show, we have Chris Wilcox. Chris is the world's leading analyst and commentator on the global wool industry. He has 25 years experience in conducting and guiding economic research, market intelligence analysis and strategic assessment of key issues in the global wool industry in a career of over 35 years in Australian agribusiness. Chris operates his own consultancy business under the name Poimena Analysis and has a number of roles in the global wool industry. Welcome, Chris. It's great to have you on the show today.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you? Well, I already gave a little introduction to you, but why don't we start by you telling us a little bit more about your career and the work you do today for the wool industry?
Sure. Look, I did an agricultural science degree 30, 40 years ago, and then did a master's of agricultural economics. Worked in agriculture in Australia throughout the 1980s, and then in the early 90s, I was employed by the Australian Wool Corporation Market 2 as the 2IC in the market intelligence area. Then through the 90s, I worked with the various organisations or the various named organisations, Australian Wool Research and Promotion Organisation, IWS International, the IWS, and eventually became the Australian Wool Services, which owned both the Woolmark Company and Australian Wool Innovation in the early 2000s. Throughout that time, I had various roles. I was manager of the trade policy unit for the organisation, as well as becoming the chief economist. And I was the chief economist at Woolmark until 2008, when I left Woolmark and then started up my own consultancy, but also started work with the National Council of Wool Selling Brokers of Australia as the executive director. And amongst other things, I'm still doing that, but among other things, I'm also a non-executive director for the Australian Wool Testing Authority. I'm chairman of the Market Intelligence Committee for the International Wool Textile Organisation. And as well, I have a number of consultant positions where I write and analyse the world wool market and write about that and provide that for clients, our clients around the world, in Europe, in America, in South America and in China.
Yeah, Chris, I think you're one of those many people in the wool industry who wear a lot of hats because you embody so many different roles. And I also remember that during my time at IWTO, that's where I met you, that you were my number one go-to person of understanding how the wool market works. And obviously, you always prepared the statistics that IWTO would publish. And I would like to ask you today, also just give us an overview of the wool market. And I would like you to give us an overview on a few particular questions, like how big is the wool industry compared to other fibers? Which are the major wool producing countries and which are the major wool consuming countries? And what happened to wool production over the past 20 years?
Sure. Look, there's a whole lot there in that question. The wool market, of course, there's a large number of countries that produce wool, but the biggest wool producing countries are Australia, China, New Zealand, the countries of the former USSR. We also have the United Kingdom. Then we've had the South American countries, Uruguay and Argentina, and of course South Africa. They're quite big wool producing countries, but also they export most of their production. But China, as I said, is the biggest. It is the second biggest wool producing country. It's the country with the most number of sheep, but it relies heavily on imports of wool from the major wool exporting countries like Australia and New Zealand. So, and China is the most important manufacturing location for wool products. It takes about 75% of Australia's wool exports, and in total of the major wool exporting countries, that's Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Uruguay, and Argentina, it accounts for around about 55-60% of their exports. So therefore, and then manufactures those products and exports a variety of products, and is also a very big exporter of wool products. But in terms of wool consumption at retail, China is the biggest retail consumer of wool in the world. It accounts for around about 20% of world wool consumption at retail. Other big wool consuming countries are countries like the United States. They take around about 10%. Japan also accounts for about 10% of the world wool sold at retail. Italy, Germany, and the UK and France are also big. Italy and Germany about 5% each, and then the UK about 4%, France about 3%. And then we have South Korea to round out the top eight, and they account for about 5% as well. So when you add up all those percentages, those eight countries account for a bit over 60% of the world consumption of wool at retail. And then other countries, including Australia, make up the rest. But the wool industry is only very small compared with other fibres. It only accounts for around about 1.2% of world production of textile fibres. And the other thing that's happened in the last almost 25 years, we've seen that world wool production has dropped dramatically. It's dropped by 41%. And for wool that's used in clothing, the production levels have halved in that 25 years. And that's been driven by concerns about wool prices amongst growers. Wool growers have found that they can make more money in other enterprises, other agricultural enterprises, and as a result, they've moved away from wool. And they've also, over the last few years, moved away to producing more sheep for meat rather than for wool. But then, with the other fibres, we've seen a massive growth in production of man-made fibres. The early 1990s, so about 25 years, the production of man-made fibres has tripled in that time. And for filament fibres, for example, it's increased by more than 500% in that 25 years. Cellulose has also doubled. Cellulose fibre has doubled. Meanwhile, production of cotton has only increased by 20%. The fact is that wool cannot compete in a volume basis against those kind of massive increases in production. There's huge factories through China, through the rest of Asia, and elsewhere around the world, and they just overwhelm wool in terms of the economies of size that they have. Around about 30 of those plants can produce as much fibre as the Australian wool industry, which is the biggest wool production country in the world. So that is a challenge.
Yeah, when you hear those numbers, it's almost unbelievable. And maybe to put that a little bit into perspective, can you tell us, like, what was wool's market share like many, many years ago in the past, and how has it changed over time and why? Just to maybe play a little bit with those numbers that you mentioned earlier.
Sure. Look, back in the early 1960s, wool's share of global textile fibre production was around about 9%. That dropped reasonably steadily through the 60s and 70s and into the 80s, but not at a massive pace. But then when we saw the big mills going into Asia, in particular into China, through the early 1990s, we've seen that drop away quite substantially down to around about 1.2% currently. But keep in mind that that's all textile fibres. That's not just fibres that are used in clothing, it's also fibres that are used in industrial uses. It's fibres that are used in interior textiles and various other medical uses and so on. Many of those uses, wool isn't suitable because of, in part because of the prices, but also partly because of the functionality. You think about a modern car, for example, that's chock-a-block full of fibre, and almost all of that is synthetic fibre. The dashboard and the flooring and everything, almost everything is some form of textile fibre. Wool doesn't compete in that space. And we need to acknowledge that and keep that in mind. So when you're talking about market share, I don't think the volume share that people talk about, that dropping down to 1.2%, is a very good measure. If you looked at value share, wool's total share of the market would be high and would probably be more like 3 or 4%. But when you start narrowing it down into the products that in which wool is best suited, that share would increase would increase to 15 or 20% by value. And that's an important difference. And for as an economist, I think value share is a far more important and relevant number than volume share. We just can't compete on volume.
Okay, I like that. I don't think I've ever heard it said like that, so thank you for that, teaching me something today as well. And but I want to get back to you know, the demand for textile fibers, as there's a rising population and also an increase in economic wealth. There should be an opportunity for wool to grow. And is that actually the case? If so, how? And if it's not the case, why not?
Well, it certainly is an opportunity. And I think we have seen that increased rising population and also the increased economic wealth bringing greater demand for wool. But we can't see it in the volume of wool sold because production levels have been declining. And you can't sell what you don't have. But what we have been seeing, particularly for merino wool in the last 20 years, is a steady rise in the price paid. There's been ups and downs over that period, but there's been a long-term trend upwards. And that reflects, in part, this increased demand for textile fibres generally flowing through to wool. And we're seeing that increased demand in countries such as China. As I said, China's now the biggest consuming country at retail in the world. And we're seeing that growth and the potential for more growth in China as a result of the huge increase in economic wealth in China and the huge increase in the middle class. And we are seeing that come through, but we've got to think about it in terms of the value of sales, not just the volume of sales. And so, yes, there is certainly an opportunity, and that will continue if we're able to tell the world the benefits of wool.
Yes, indeed. And that's one of my missions as well. So, no, I agree with you on that one. And there's another question that I used to get when I worked at IWTO is people would come up to me and ask, so what's the price for wool at the moment? And I always struggled to answer that question because there was never one price for wool. And can you give us like an easy explanation as like how do wool prices compare to other fibers and why is there not one price for wool?
Okay, let's tackle the first one, which is why is there not one price for wool. We must remember that wool isn't like a polyester filament or staple, which is very consistent. It's very consistent in its attributes. You can set the machine to whatever diameter you want and then let it go. With wool, you have natural variation as a result of climate, of the breed type, and even within the breed, the bloodlines. And so what you find is that it results in many different attributes of wool. Now, the biggest driver of price for wool is the micron, the diameter of the wool. So the finer the diameter, the higher the price, and that tends to go into the higher value products. And so, we see different prices for superfine wool of, say, 18 microns compared with 21 micron wool, which is medium merino wool, compared with corridor wool of 27 micron, a bit broader wool that goes into different types of product, hand-knitting yarn, for example, and moving out to the broad wools of 35, 36 microns more, and 40 microns that go into carpets. All of those have different product destinations, and as a result, they're driven by different price measures. And so we have a different range of prices depending on what the diameter of the wool is. But even within the diameter of wool, there's differences because there's differences in the raw wool, the differences in the length of the wool that comes from the sheep. There's differences in the strength of the fibre itself. The stronger it is, the higher the price. There's differences in the amount of dirt and so on that's contained in the wool. And so you have a range of differences that means that individual parcels of wool, individual lots of wool, generate a different price depending on what the buyers are looking for and what the wool processors are looking for, what the top makers, what the spinners, what the weavers are looking for and the knitters are looking for. So it means that we have a diversity of prices and we have... But what we do have is price guides in Australia. We have AWEX producing price guides by micron categories, but also we have the market indicator that gives an indication about the general direction of prices. It's like a stock market indicator. It's like the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones moves up and down and you get a general view, feeling about the way the market's moving, but individual stocks might be moving in a different direction. We have exactly the same situation with wool, both here in Australia, but you have the same situation now with the market indicator in South Africa. You have a similar kind of measure in New Zealand as well. And even in China, they have market indicators as well, not to mention the British Wool Marketing Board and their indicators. So, and each one gives you a general indication about the way that market segment is moving. But then the individual parcels of wool will have a different price in any given day.
Okay, and the other question on how the wool prices compare to other fibres?
Yeah, and look, what we've seen over the last three decades now, is that we've had a steady change in the value of wool, the price of wool compared with the price for, say, synthetics or for cotton. In the 1990s, we used to say that wool, say, 21 micron wool, so medium merino wool, was about three times the price of synthetics and about three times the price of cotton. Through the 2000s, we saw that rise up through to four and five times the price. Now in the 2010s, we are now typically seeing prices that are sitting at around about six or seven times the price of synthetics and six or seven times the price of cotton. As well, what we're finding is, of course, that the superfine wools, the 18 micron wools, they're even at a greater multiple of synthetics and of cotton. But at the other end of the scale, we have the broader wools, that they are at a lower ratio of around about 2-1 currently. But one, as I said, one thing we have seen progressively in the my 25 years or more in the industry is we've seen that steady rise in the relativity, and that reflects the fact that wool supply and production is constrained. We've seen it falling, but the production of synthetics in particular has risen so strongly, the volumes have risen so strongly, the prices for synthetics have been kept down by comparison. And so, as a result, we've seen that steady rise over the last 3 decades.
Okay, that's really interesting, and thank you for explaining it. And another figure that's always very interesting, especially when we talked earlier that we would want to ideally increase our wool supply, then we also need more sheep. So maybe can you give us a little bit of an overview about the sheep population, maybe like also what it was in the past and what's the sheep number situation today, and also maybe if you can give us a little bit of an outlook.
Sure. Well, and I've talked about wool production falling over the last 2.5 decades. And sheep numbers have fallen, but not by very much. They've only fallen by about 4% over that 2.5 decades, compared with the 40-odd% for wool production. We did see sheep numbers drop quite a bit through the 1990s, and then eventually by the early 2000s reach a low point of about 1.1 million head. But that's 1.1 billion head, I should say. But that's turned around, and we've seen a fairly steady rise since that low point. And we're now back to levels that are only a little bit below what we saw at the peak in 1990. So we've got wool production down by a lot, but sheep numbers recovering over the last 10, 12 years. Why would you think that is?
I'm guessing that it has to do with sheep, with meat production.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. What we've seen in the last 10, 15 years is an increased demand for meat, sheep meat. There's been an increased demand for meat protein generally as emerging countries and developing countries have increased their population income. So, for example, China, they're looking for more animal protein, and as a result, we're seeing an increased demand for sheep meat. And as a result, we're seeing sheep meat prices, certainly in Australia and New Zealand, at high levels. Now, I say Australia and New Zealand because they are the two biggest exporters of sheep meat in the world by a long margin. They account for over 50% of world exports of sheep meat. And with prices being so high, generally across around the world for sheep meat, there's been a real shift in the use of sheep for meat, towards the use of sheep for meat and away from the use of sheep for wool. We've seen that here in Australia. We've seen that to a lesser extent in New Zealand. We've certainly seen it in China. There's been a heavy emphasis in producing sheep for meat and away from increasing wool production as we saw through the 1980s and into the 1990s. So we've got a very different pattern. We're now getting to a point, though, that certainly in Australia, that we need to start rebuilding the sheep flock, because we've been basically eating our way through the flock. We've been eating the male lambs, and we've also been increasingly eating the female lambs. We're now getting to a point where we need to restock, and that is starting. And I think you'll find that the sheep meat numbers, sheep population will continue to rise, but there will be something of a swing back towards sheep for wool, because we're getting to price levels where that are very favourable for wool production now.
Well, I like that outlook. So I hope you are right on that prediction, and that would be really wonderful if we could increase the number of wool sheep in the world. And another and another factor that's important is also the farmer. Are there any changes in regards to farmers who are working with sheep, and also just the general number of farmers in agriculture? Is there a demographic change also happening?
There is absolutely a change in terms of the number, or has been a change in the number of farmers that are interested in sheep. We saw that dramatically in Australia through the 1990s and through the 2000s, as with low wool prices, we had a large number of farmers move away from wool. A significant portion of Australian wool production is in, or has been in, what we call the wheat sheep zone, so the area that grows both grains and also sheep. And through the 1990s and 2000, there was a massive shift away from sheep in that area into just purely cropping of grain. And that's continued. And we've now got a younger generation of farmers in many of those properties in the wheat sheep area that like to drive tractors rather than handle sheep. And they like the gadgets that are in the tractors. They like the fact that the tractors are self-driving, and they've got all the computerised systems they like. They're young and they're innovative. And so we're seeing less interest in going back into sheep, even though the profitability is very good now for sheep. Certainly here in Australia. In New Zealand, we've seen a shift away from sheep in general into dairy production, either converting farms from sheep-producing farms to dairy herd farms, or what's called dairy support farms, which are basically land for adjustment of dairy herds. Now, that involves irrigation. It involves a significant capital investment. And so those farms that have moved away from sheep into dairy production, I would be surprised if they move back into sheep anytime soon. Elsewhere, we've also seen a shift away from sheep into grains, Argentina, Uruguay, for example, or into other enterprises around the world. And that's one of the inhibitors, where we've got less farmers that have they've moved away from sheep into other enterprises, and there's not going to be any rush to go back into those into producing sheep in those areas, for partly because of the investment.
But you mentioned that these younger farmers who do grow crops, that they like the gadgets. But the other day we had a presentation showing a lot of gadgets, like drones, also used for sheep herding. So hopefully that will motivate a few farmers as well.
Yes, hope so. And certainly some of that is very, and some of the technology that I've seen with virtual fences and so on, I think that's going to be very interesting.
Very technical.
One of the challenges, I think, is technology in the shearing shed.
Well, that's probably another whole topic for another podcast.
I think it is, yes.
Okay, there's another question I wanted to ask you. And you mentioned earlier that China is the largest wool manufacturing country, besides also being a very large wool consuming country. But do you foresee any shifts in manufacturing to other countries over the next years? Or will China be the biggest one?
I think we've already started to see some shift. And one of the obvious ones is Vietnam, and there's been a shift of the labour-intensive aspects of wool processing into Vietnam. But I think we'll see other shifts as well. I really think that North Africa is a real possibility. People have talked about North Africa for quite some time. One of the issues with North Africa is, of course, political instability, which discourages companies from investing in that area. But in terms of labour cost, in terms of opportunities, I think, and also location, in terms of access into Europe in particular, I think there's some real advantages there. So I see that as real potential. And I was interested to learn when I was in China last year that Sunshine, the biggest wool processing, end-to-end wool processing company in the world, a major men's suit manufacturer, major clothing manufacturer, and particularly wool, is establishing a mill in Ethiopia and investing a significant amount of money to first of all take the wool top and then take it through spinning and weaving and garment making. But they're ultimately looking at moving top making there. And so that's an example of the opportunities, I think, in North Africa. India is another region. It's been a long-established wool processing country. I think, to me, it hasn't grown as people might have expected, partly because it only has a very limited domestic market. What the big advantage China has is it's got a very large potential. Even when it began, it had a large potential domestic market, whereas India's domestic market potential is only fairly limited, unfortunately. And that, therefore, I suspect probably limits the investment opportunities there. But you'll find a number of other countries, lower labour cost countries, taking up the mantle of the more labour intensive activities such as garment making and particularly garment making. And so Vietnam is probably at the forefront of that. We probably see other Southeast Asian countries as being an opportunity, working your way through to Bangladesh and so on. So, but it will be very much driven by, in the first instance anyway, labour cost and relative labour costs and who is willing to invest in those regions. And of course, there's always the sovereign risk of political uncertainty,
okay,
which might hold countries back.
Yeah. And there's one more question that I would like to ask you before we wrap up, and that's also a little bit about market trends for different wool types. Do you see particular market growth today? Like, or where do you see particular market growth today and in the near future for different types of wool?
Sure. Look, I did a large study for the New South Wales Department of Agriculture back in the late 2014 and into 2015, together with three colleagues. And one aspect we looked at was exactly this, where the product segment opportunities were. And it's pretty clear, it's pretty clear that the growth in demand for wool in particular has been at that superfine end, the 18 microns and finer. Even though prices for that wool until the last 6 months or so have been disappointing, that's largely because we had a big surge in production of that wool. But one aspect I didn't mention earlier is that even though we've had wool production declining, one aspect we have had is an increase in production of superfine wool. We had growers either leaving the industry or moving away from that medium merino wool into superfine wool production. We had an oversupply situation. As a result, prices were low compared with other microns. But nevertheless, when we look at the value of demand, we see a strong growth in demand for that wool. And it was simply that the supply was overwhelming it. That will continue. I can see that demand will continue because people are looking for next to skin comfort, which superfine wool, merino wool fits perfectly. Active leisure wear, those kind of things, smart casual knits, in particular in women's wear, is becoming a real growth area, and even in men's wear as well. They're the major growth areas that I see. There's also growth opportunities, I think, in specialty interior textiles as well, so for some of the broader wools. Where we see I think we'll see continued strength is in men's tailored wear, both in men's suits, in men coats, and men's outer coats. Women's outer coats, and we've seen significant growth in the last 3 or 4 years in the international trade of women's outer coats. That includes a variety of styles, including double-faced fabric, woolen fabric that was there was a manic market for it 12 months or so ago. That's now cooled down, but nevertheless, it's still an important market segment. But there will be areas that have been in long-term decline and will continue, I think, and that's women's tailored suitings and women's wool dresses. They've both been declining. We lost a significant part of the women's wear market in the late 1990s, early 2000s, and that was one of the big areas that we lost volume. But another area is the hand knitting yarn sector, and certainly we're seeing, I think, some impact of that loss of the hand knitting yarn sector in the Corridale crossbred market of about 26 to 32 micron. I think there has been we've lost some of that market, so it's been a structural decline, and that's meant that prices for those wools are pretty poor at the moment. We've seen some areas in the carpet wool area. We've seen some good growth for some countries, some regions, but we've seen some difficult trading for others, where we've got strong competition from lower priced and poorer quality synthetic carpets. But nevertheless, that will continue to be a challenge. But I see the upper price end of wool carpets will still see some good, strong sales.
Okay, but did I understand correctly that you see in hand knitting yarns a decline? Because it feels that around me everybody is knitting, but that could be just my personal...
In terms of volume, and see, the thing is that China is the biggest market for hand knitting yarn, and it appears that there's been a drop in demand for hand knitting yarn in China. That's really hurt some parts of the raw wool markets, particularly in Uruguay, for example, and also New Zealand.
Okay. Well, let's hope that, at least I would say in Europe, there's a big hand knitting trend, and maybe that will go to other countries as well.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chris. You gave us a really, really good overview of the wool market. And before we say goodbye, what is the best way to get in contact with you if anybody wanted more information or would like to hire you as a speaker, etc.? How can they get in contact?
Well, the best way is to email me. And my email address is poimena, that's P-O-I-M-E-N-A, at live.com.au.
Okay. And we'll link to that email address also in the show notes so that it's easy to connect with you. And
excellent.
Yeah, and everything you said, I really appreciate. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a good rest of your evening in Australia.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity too. I've enjoyed it. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
And I'll talk to you later. Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this overview of the wool market by Chris Wilcox. If you want to find out more about Chris and his work, visit the show notes at elizabethvandelden.com/016. Here you will find all the links that were mentioned during the episode. Visit elizabethvandelden.com/016. Don't want to miss out on any of the future episodes? Then subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and also like us on Facebook at Elizabeth Van Delden. Thank you, and see you next week.